welcome to Voluntary Values with Daryl W. Perry
and Emberly McCullough.
This is the first ever edition of Voluntary Values here on LRN.FM. Give us a call at area code 603-435-1105. We will talk about all things voluntary, including, but not limited to, who would build the roads? We have some good stories for you this week. We're going to start off with the fair minimum wage.
Okay, guys. So I wrote an article on freekeen.com called the fair minimum wage ? And apparently on the 23rd, Congressman George Miller, who's a Democrat from California, and Senator Tom Harkin, a Democrat from Iowa, introduced the Fair Minimum Wage Act of 2012 in the House and the Senate. This bill proposes 3 85-cent raises to the minimum wage, which is currently $7.25, to be $9.80 by the end of 2014. So I wrote in this article, I find this to be outrageous. Do these politicians never learn? Don't they understand that the minimum wage is a job killer? I mean, every time that the minimum wage is raised, jobs go away, especially for low-skilled, uneducated people.
But, Emberly, allow me to play devil's advocate here for a moment, and hopefully this will entice some calls. Without the minimum wage and without labor laws, then 5-year-old children will be working in factories assembling weapons, and we just can't have that. We need regulations and we need minimum wage laws, because otherwise everybody will be making a penny except for the executives and CEOs, who will be making $50 bazillion. And you know, we need a minimum wage. How do you answer the statists that throw these arguments at you?
Okay, well, in a true voluntarist society, you know, you wouldn't be burdened with taxes. So first of all, you wouldn't have a government lording over each and every company and each and every individual telling them what they're worth or what companies have to pay. So in that context where there's no government and you're not paying taxes out, you know, income taxes, corporate taxes, all of these taxes are gone. So, you know, $7.25 or $5 an hour, you know, will certainly be, you'll be taking all that money home with you. So it actually, you know, if you work for 40 hours a week and you're only making $5 an hour, you're still going to take all of that money home with you instead of only really taking home $3.75 of that $5.
Okay. And another statist argument is, but who could live on $5 an hour?
Well, lots of people, because I will tell you this, in a voluntary society, when there's no taxes, so you're talking about taxes being embedded into each and every product that we buy. So everything that we purchase, whether it's food, whether it's clothing, shoes, household materials, computers, anything that we purchase out on the market today has lots and lots of embedded taxes into them. And those will all go away. So once those are gone, all those embedded taxes, guess what? The prices will drop.
Well, not only that, I was trying to lead you in a specific area by asking you these, you know, statist
and
ideology questions.
Why shouldn't 5-year-olds be able to work?
Well, that's not even the question that I was or the answer that I was trying to get from you. Where I was trying to take you, and you didn't go down this path, but it allows me to go down this path. Very few people are actually working for minimum wage.
That's true.
And of the people that are working for minimum wage, the vast majority are either students or people working part-time as a second income for a household.
That's very true.
I forget the statistic, but I saw somewhere a couple years ago that I think it's 80% of, you know, stay-at-home mothers that have employment work part-time and generally in a minimum wage paying job. So that's not the primary breadwinner of any household. You know, it's generally either a second job or a second income for a household, right. or it's a kid getting his first job.
Right. And the vast
who can't right. do anything other than minimum wage employment.
Right. And the thing is that we eliminate jobs for low skilled workers when the minimum wage is upped, you know, and that leads, I mean, I have a 16-year-old son, and I'm going to tell you right now, he has no marketable job skills, and the poor child cannot find a job to save his life. No one wants to hire him because he has no experience.
Right.
And but how can you get experience? But,
right.
but because the minimum wage is $7.25, you know, they have to end up hiring other people who have more experience to do the job so they don't have to waste a lot of time training them.
When I entered the job market 20 years ago almost, I think minimum wage was just over $4 an hour.
Right. And did it kill you to work for $4 an hour?
And no, it didn't. I would have accepted less.
Exactly.
But once minimum wage was raised from, you know, I think it was 4.25 maybe, might have been 4.15, then to 5.25 during the Clinton years, you know, yeah, every time there was a increase in minimum wage, of course, you know, I would get a raise. But then the raises that I had already accumulated from my employment, they were basically wiped away.
Exactly.
Because, oh, now instead of making $1.50 over minimum wage, I'm making 50 cents over minimum
right.
wage.
It takes away the power of the employers to pay their employees a fair wage based on their experience.
And it also takes away negotiating power.
That's true, too.
Between
yes.
employer and employee.
Because if you don't want to, you know, if you have, if say, like, for instance, myself, I have 20 years of experience in the same field. I'm not going to accept a job for $10 an hour. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen with 20 years of experience. Why should I accept a job that's $10 an hour? But I have the education and the experience to back up my demands for a higher pay.
And speaking of $10 an hour, I noticed that this bill would increase minimum wage to $9.80 per hour.
Right. They were trying to raise it up to 10
why
even.
Why not just make it $10 even? And if we're just going to raise it, why not make it $100 per hour? Everybody
right.
makes $100 per hour. And then it's a nice even number. You know, because right now it's, you know, hard-pressed to find a job making $100 a day.
Right.
So let's just say you're making $100 an hour, and then full-time employment could go from 40 hours down to 20 hours
right.
in a week. And everybody would still be making a lot of money.
Well, you know what? There are lots of ways to you know, fix what's wrong with the monetary problems that we have in employment. You know, I've always long been an advocate of working 4 10-hour days instead of 5 8-hour days.
Oh, I love 10-hour days.
I do too.
I had a job one time where I was working hospital security, and we would do 8-hour days through the week, 12-hour days on the weekends. And if anyone ever called off because I was a supervisor, if I could not find anybody to cover the shift, it was my responsibility to cover the shift. So I asked my supervisor, I said, Dave, can I just work a 16-hour shift and a 24-hour shift and be off the rest of the week? And, of course, he denied my request, citing, you know, several labor laws.
Right.
But I said, wait a second. If I'm already working a 12-hour shift and somebody calls off and I can't cover that shift, I'll be forced to work a 24-hour shift.
Right.
So why not just schedule me for a 16 and a 24, and then I have Monday through
right.
Friday off?
We're so hindered by the labor laws.
All right, we've got a break coming up, so we will continue this discussion on labor laws and fair minimum wage, and I'm going to pull up some history on the history of minimum wage. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Voluntary Values. is Voluntary Values. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Emberly.
And before we went to the break, we were talking about the fair minimum wage, a bill that's been introduced in the House and the Senate by Congressman George Miller and Senator Tom Harkin, respectively. And we were talking about the history of minimum wage and how minimum wage actually hurts the lesser skilled individuals. I don't like saying unskilled.
Well, the lower skilled and, you know, lower educated people.
Everyone has some skill, you know, whether it's you can only put a thing of fries in the fryolator or whether you can only push little buttons on a cash register. And I noticed they don't actually have the words of things on cash registers anymore. It's mostly pictures.
Right. And it's part of the, I think, global conspiracy, if you'll let me use that term for Emma.
Down.
The dumbing down of everyone in society, not just Americans, but literally people all over the world are getting dumbed down. Because if you think about it, McDonald's is now pretty much in every country in the world.
Yeah.
And so if McDonald's is instead of on
so
their
it's
key,
the
on their
international
pads,
cash register.
Right. That they're only putting pictures. Okay, so you don't know what the word fry is anymore. All you can see is the picture. So you punch that button that has the picture on it.
I know.
I mean,
you
are
don't,
we back? Are we back in preschool?
I know you don't eat at McDonald's.
Hell
but
no.
I'm sure you've eaten at a fast food restaurant sometime.
I have in the past.
In the last couple of years. Have you ever had a total that comes out, you know, let's just say like $9.57, and you hand the kid $10 and you're like, oh, wait, hold on. Here's 7 cents. And they get totally confused and don't know what to do.
Yep.
Oh, I already put $10 in here. Let me get my manager. No, just hand me 2 quarters.
It's very sad.
I don't know.
That's
I need
not
to
right.
go get my manager. And then they wind up handing you your 7 cents back and then 43 cents because
right.
that's what the little screen told them.
That's
was
what the
43.
Screen told them to do.
It's like, no, I specifically wanted 2 quarters. That's why I handed
that's
you.
That's why I handed you that. Would you like me to make the change
cents.
For you? I have done that before.
Do I need to like jump back there and make my own sandwich to make sure you don't screw it up? You know, because only ketchup means that I only want ketchup on the burger.
Right.
But okay, so, you know, we've sort of derailed there, and that happens a lot with me. It's partly because of the ADD and partly because of the multiple concussions. So if I ever go off on a little tangent, just give me that weird look that you just did.
I will.
And anybody watching the webcam, you will have been able to see that weird look. And you can view the cam at cam.lrn.fm, I believe.
I believe that's it.
So getting back to the history of minimum wage, I found a really good website titled minimumwage.org. And on their page,
there's a dash in the middle between minimum and wage.
There's a dash. It's minimum-wage.org. And it gives the history of minimum wage in the U.S. And it says, before the minimum wage was introduced during the Great Depression of the 1930s, there was no national minimum wage. Or indeed any legislation to protect workers from exploitation. I love how they say that.
Right.
You know, people were being exploited.
Because they were working for, what? In sweatshops and factories.
You read the article.
Yes.
Yeah. Because of this lack of regulation, tens of thousands of workers were routinely exploited in sweatshops and factories, forced to work in horrible conditions for pennies a week. Pennies!
Pennies.
Okay, let's pause right here and pennies a week. Okay, based on the CPI, that's the Consumer Price Index, which is the official federal government's numbers on inflation. Based on their numbers, which I know is a lie, but based on their own numbers, the value of the dollar now compared to 1913 is 3 cents. That's the official government figure, that a dollar in 1913 or a dollar, the values dropped 97%.
Yeah.
And conversely, it's, you know, inflated by like 2,300%. So, you know, even assuming that this is right, pennies a week, which I don't believe, but still, a dollar or $2 a week in 1930 would have the value of several $1,000s a week now. You know, so it's not like people were
right. They make it seem as if
they were working for pennies. Okay, right. Yeah, and you could buy an entire family's meal for a dollar.
Right. And they make it seem like, the pennies that they were making then, or the small amount of money that they were making then, because I do believe that the pennies for a week is a bit of a fallacy as well. You know, they make it seem
99 pennies is still technically pennies a week.
So they make it seem like that was today's 99 cents. Like in today's society, what can 99 cents buy you? I don't really know anything that 99 cents can buy you.
You could buy three pieces of candy down at news store in downtown Keene.
At the Corner News, yeah.
Well, I was trying not to give out the name since they're not paying for advertising.
Oops, that's a shout out to Allie and all of her people down there.
And they're good people. They will accept silver, by the way.
That's awesome.
They're good people down there. So if you're in the Keene area,
anyways,
then don't tell them we told you, but they're good people. So anyway, pennies a week. And let me again sidetrack here for a moment. I've read statistics where, you know, like the average person in, you know, an unindustrialized country, you know, basically the third world.
Right.
They live on like a dollar a day.
Right.
Well, okay. That's one U.S. dollar. Convert that to whatever currency they have over there. And it's very comparable to what the average person earns in the U.S. You know, people throw out these statistics without converting things to whatever the local currency is.
Well, you know, people are so ignorant that there are other currencies in the world. For some reason, Americans think that the dollar rules all, or that the only two currencies in the world are the dollar and the euro, which even if they know about the euro, they're one step ahead of most people because most people don't even know about that.
Right.
So people wake up. There are more currencies than just the dollar, and certainly more currencies than just the dollar and the euro. There's lots.
There are hundreds, if not thousands, of currencies.
Not everyone ascribes to the dollar and the euro.
Yeah, and then there are local currencies even within the U.S.
Right.
The Ithaca Hours, there's one down in Berkshire, Mass. I think they call it the Berkey, but I'm not entirely positive.
I'm not very familiar with alternative currencies.
But there are several alternative currencies, even within the U.S. And, you know, Liberty Dollar, they got in trouble several years ago.
Yep.
But that's a topic for a whole other show.
Exactly.
We might actually talk about that next week because there's some interesting updates with Bitcoin.
Awesome.
But we'll finish talking about minimum wage this break. Give us a call at 603-435-1105. This is Voluntary Values. And we're back. This is Voluntary Values. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Emberly.
And we've been talking about the minimum wage and the Fair Minimum Wage Act of 2012 that would raise the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $9.80 an hour. We've also been talking about the history of minimum wage. And I got sidetracked. Yeah, I do that a lot. Got sidetracked talking about the history of minimum wage. And there's a website, minimum-wage.org. They have a history of minimum wage, but they have this thing written from a very statist perspective.
I would definitely say it's a very statist. They use a lot of very hot button words like
exploiting employees and working in horrible conditions
for exactly
pennies a week.
For pennies.
Reminds me of the who is the lady that was on All in the Family that now got chubby and raises money. For 85 cents a week, you can feed this starving child. It's only 85. That's pennies a week. That's pennies a day.
That's pennies a day.
For pennies a day, you can feed starving children in foreign countries.
Well, we can thank the lovely President Franklin D. Roosevelt for this minimum wage getting started and, you know, labor laws in general getting started.
Yeah, let me finish reading, or at least read the next couple of paragraphs of this. It says, early attempts by labor unions to create a mandatory minimum wage were ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. It was unconstitutional on the grounds that minimum wage laws restricted the worker's right to set the price for his own labor. This allowed employers to continue exploiting workers. When incredible demand for jobs caused wages to drop to an all-time low, with poverty becoming a huge national issue, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt promised to constitutionally protect American workers as a key part of his 1936 reelection campaign. After winning the historic 1936 election by a landslide. Not just winning, and it's not just an election. It's a historic election that was won by a landslide. President Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act, or FLSA, in early 1938. The FLSA introduced sweeping regulations to protect Americans from being exploited and created a mandatory minimum wage of, drumroll please, 25 cents an hour. And this minimum wage was supposed to maintain a minimum standard of living necessary for health, efficiency, and general well-being without substantially curtailing employment. So, Amberly, do you believe that the 25-cent federal minimum wage signed into law in 1938 protected and maintained a minimum standard of living? And if it did, why has minimum wage been increased to $7.25 an hour now? And why do they want to increase it to $9.80 instead of, you know, a nice big number that would make everyone wealthy, like $100 an hour?
Well, truthfully, I have to say, I think the minimum wage is terrible. I don't agree with it at all. I do, like I said in my article, I do believe that what happens when you institute a higher and higher minimum wage, or even a minimum, very, very minimum, like this 25 cents an hour.
That's right, pennies
a week. Right. In 1938, that was probably a pretty big deal. So maybe people were only making 10 cents an hour or 5 cents an hour before that.
It says here they were making pennies a week.
Pennies a week. So,
which, if I were to get a paycheck now and request it in all pennies, technically, would I be making pennies a week? Just a very large sum of pennies?
I believe you would be making pennies a week if you requested your check. I don't think they can write a check in pennies only, though.
Right. But when I go cash it at the bank and I say, I would like pennies, all pennies. What constitutes pennies a week? Does it have to be under $1?
Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, they make this claim that these people were being exploited and they only worked for pennies a week, but they don't specify how many pennies that is.
If I won, so the
in your
300...
in your mind, you're thinking, oh my gosh, so they only make like less than a dollar a week?
Most
that's
people
terrible.
Think they're making less than a dime a week, because most people don't think of 11 cents in the terms of pennies.
That's probably
they
pretty
think
true.
A dime and a penny. So if I won the $300 million Powerball jackpot and requested all pennies, what? I don't know where I'd store.
Right. You would have to have a very big
pennies.
Place.
Where
very,
would I store three? Or no, that would be 30 billion. I can't do math.
30 trillion, I think, is what that equals out
to. I cannot do math while concussed.
300 million, I think.
Times
comes out to
100.
Like $3 trillion or something.
Yeah, some large amount. So where would I store that many pennies? But still, then I could say I only won pennies.
Well,
it was
anyway,
a jackpot,
let's,
but it was
let's,
pennies.
The penny thing, I think, has been beaten dead here.
I do believe so. I just, you know, find it funny that they're using these terms without giving specifics.
Well, they don't. They can generalize all they want because that's the way they put these. They get these things into law is they generalize
exploitation. And
they never say specifically what it is. But I don't believe that the minimum wage is correct. You know, I believe what happens is, and it's all a big circle. If you really look at how everything has been destroyed in today's society, you start with the government because that's the real problem. You know, they put taxes on us and they create
the problem.
They create the problems
and then say, oh, hey, we can fix this.
Right. So we're going to institute all these laws and these acts and you're going to have to abide by them whether you want to or not. So if I want to go and work for $5 an hour, say I'm, 15 and I want a job and, the McDonald's down the street wants to hire me, but they can only hire one person because the minimum wage is $7.25 and they only have $10 to hire a new person. So they can't hire two people because the minimum wage says $7.25.
Right.
So they have to pay. They can only pay one person. They can't pay two people $5 an hour. And have two workers making a living.
Well, paying people $5, that would be exploiting them. And
oh, please. If you're willing to work for $5 an hour, and I will tell you right now, if I'm desperate, I will work for $5 an hour.
I would. Yeah, I probably would as well. Although I believe that my time is much more valuable than
that. Well, of course. But
depending on what it is, I would volunteer my time to get the experience.
Right. And there is, unfortunately, kids are forced into volunteering their time to get experience anymore, because there are no jobs that pay $5 an hour anymore.
Right. Well, when I was saying volunteering my time, I was thinking more along the lines of an apprenticeship.
Right.
Which was very popular, back in the past.
Where are those gone?
Like we have a call. I know that we're not really supposed to do this, but caller, you are on the air. Please identify yourself.
It's Serena.
Hello, Serena.
Hey,
how
Serena.
Are you?
Hi, guys. I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic.
Doing well.
Hey. I love the way you guys are here. It's awesome. Your dynamic rocks.
Thank you very much.
What's on
your mind? Did you want to talk about minimum wage?
Well, I have a bunch to say about minimum wage I'm agreeing with everything that you guys are saying and laughing a lot. So I figured I'd find that dumb Mariah Carey quote about what she talks about starving kids to start off.
Okay. Oh, yes. Please share that quote with us.
Yeah. Whenever I watch TV and see those poor starving kids all over the world, I can't help but cry. I mean, I'd love to be skinny like that, but not with all those flies and death and stuff.
Okay, Serena, do you mind holding over through this break?
No.
All right, we're going to put you on hold, and we will come back after this break. This is Voluntary Values. This is Voluntary Values. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Emberly.
And we have a caller that hung over through the break. We've been talking about minimum wage and minimum wage laws and, the hyperbole that before minimum wage, people made pennies a week. And then, the infomercials on TV for, donate for 85 cents a week. You can feed this starving child. And that's just pennies a day. And we've got Serena on the line. She told us a quote from Mariah Carey, who would like to be skinny like those people, only minus the flies and death and stuff. So, Serena, what was on your mind about minimum wage or the show in general?
Well, I love talking with you guys and rantings and doing on the radio would probably be fun, right?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I missed you last night, Emberly.
I'm sorry, sweetheart. I've been sticking to the homestead.
Okay. Well, that's great. I don't know. I agree with you with the whole the fact that, people should be able to pay people $2 an hour if they're willing to get paid $2 an hour. If you have something where you want to hire people, it used to be, or I don't know if it ever was, like a community thing versus a, well, we don't know each other very well, and we're just going to stick each other in the same company because that's what people do. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, there's always been, you know, the acceptable practice, sort of, you know, non-binding agreement. I guess they call that the social contract of, you know, we don't find that behavior acceptable in this area. So, you know, we don't like your kind here. So then, you know, you're either driven out of the area or you conform. And right. I know, Serena, you've actually worked for less than minimum wage in agorist fields for cooking.
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel that you've been exploited when you cook a meal for somebody and they don't pay you $7.25 for the hour that you spent slaving over that hot stove virtually in a sweatshop? Did you feel exploited?
No. I actually planned on that stuff, you know, because I decided I want to work in conditions that I find good for myself and only myself. Not conditions necessarily, but you know what I mean.
Right, right. Well, and that's how it should be. That's right. Really how it should be.
You should be able to choose where you want to work. And then if the employer doesn't agree with your demand for payment, then you find someone who will.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything else you would like to add, Serena?
Well, I don't know. I think I'm getting to be almost as skinny as those people with the flies. Mariah Carey has gotten definitely skinnier than the people with the flies. I don't know. I'm a little unimpressed with her quote.
Yeah.
All right.
But that's basically it. She's famous. She's really loved by so many people.
Oh, that's such a sad commentary on today's society.
Yes, she is. Thank you very much
for
the call, Serena.
Thanks.
I think I cut her off before she said thank you. If you would like to call in, talk about minimum wage or whatever else you want to talk about involving a voluntary society, give us a call at 603-435-1105. And coming up next hour, we actually will have a guest.
Yes.
And what will he be talking about?
Okay, so we're going to have Nicholas Shanken on, and he's going to discuss his court case that finally got dropped about a week and a half ago in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. So he's going to discuss all of the things that went on and why he was arrested, the situation that came out of him being arrested, and the seven court appearances that he had to appear at before the case was finally dropped.
And that was a victimless crime,
that
correct?
Was a victimless crime.
Okay, so let's just briefly go over some of the victimless crimes. Not necessarily the ones that you personally witnessed people being fined for in Mount Laurel, New Jersey while you were
right
down there, but just victimless crimes in general. So let's just sort of go back and forth. Victimless crime off the top of your head.
Any kind of drug possession.
Driving while not obeying the speed limit.
My brain just went blank. I can't think of any more.
What about unregistered vehicles?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, not registering your vehicle with the state.
What about consensual polygamy?
Consensual polygamy should not be a crime.
But polygamy, whether consensual or not, is a violation.
Well, non-consensual polygamy should be a crime.
Right. I'm not condoning non-consent. I'm just saying that, you know, the way the statutes and regulations are written up throughout the United States.
How about
polygamy,
speeding?
That's what I said, driving while not obeying speed limits.
Oh, okay.
But polygamy is illegal all throughout the United States.
Everywhere? Is it illegal in Utah? Or look the other way?
They look the other way. But banning polygamy was a specific condition given to Utah before they were allowed statehood. The federal government said, first ban polygamy.
So they used their big stick to say, you will comply or you won't be a state.
Right. And the funny thing about that, because the way Utah was set up, it was originally called Deseret, which is the It comes from the Book of Mormon. It's basically, you know, the name of their holy land.
Mm-hmm.
And their territory was originally much larger. And the U.S. federal government wanted some of that territory, so they agreed to that. And then, you know, federal government said, oh, yeah, this polygamy thing, you've got to ban it.
Can't do it.
But because Deseret was set up, or, you know, what became Utah was set up as sort of a merger between church and state, where the head of the Mormon church was also the governor of the territory. I believe that's how it was. If I'm mistaken, and you know, please give us a call, correct me. But I believe that the head of the Mormon church was also the governor of the territory. And just so happens that after the federal government said you must ban polygamy, that God revealed himself to the head of the Mormon church and delivered this message that, oh, yes, polygamy is in fact bad.
Oh.
You know, it almost instantaneous, you know, it would be akin to someone telling, you know, the Vatican, hey, before we enter into this peace agreement with you, then you need to do this and that and the other thing. And then the Pope, oh, hey, you'll never guess what happened. God spoke to me last night and told me, blah, blah, blah. You know, just snap at the... Oh, yeah. It's bad now. Yesterday, it was totally okay, but bad now. Well, so, yes, consensual polygamy is, in fact, illegal all throughout the United States.
Well, I'm not sure if you're aware, but when I was 18, you could go to New Orleans, Louisiana, and drink. Yeah. Under the age of 21. So anybody over the age of 18 could go and drink. But in order for them to be allowed to do that and allow that to happen, the federal government said, well, we will not fix your roads.
Yeah.
So the roads in New Orleans were pretty bad, but yet they made a ton of money off of that 18 to 21 year old group of people that went to New Orleans, because I went to New Orleans almost every weekend that I lived in the panhandle of Florida for almost 3 years.
I believe West Virginia has a similar sort of drinking age, but instead of just 18-year-olds being able to buy any alcohol, they can only buy the lower ABV beer.
Right.
So you can get a beer between, say, like 3 and 6%.
But nothing over that.
But you can't get over 6%.
Well, eventually,
and that's one of the reasons that West Virginia University is number one in party schools, as ranked by every magazine that ranks party schools, including Playboy, Time Magazine.
Or any schools, right?
You know, yeah, everywhere that puts out these rankings every year of number one party school, West Virginia.
Well, eventually, the federal government had enough of 18 to 20 year olds being able to drink in Louisiana, and they basically told the state of Louisiana, we are going to yank all funding, so you have to stop this practice, because not only are we going to take away, we're not going to fix your roads, we're not going to give you any money at all. And so they eventually capitulated, and now you have to be 21 to drink Louisiana.
That threat of withholding funding is the primary reason that the state of Montana instituted a speed limit.
Ah, I did not know that.
It was not that long ago that Montana had no speed limit. You could drive as fast as you wanted, as long as you were driving safely.
Nice.
But they gave in to the threats of, we won't fix your roads. This is Voluntary Values, and coming up after the top of the hour break, we'll be talking more about victimless crimes, and we'll be talking with Nick Shankin about his experiences in court. This is Voluntary Values. This is Voluntary Values. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Emberly.
And coming up in just a few minutes, we will have Nick Shankin as a guest calling in from New Jersey to talk about his ordeals with the legal system and how he actually never had a victim, but yet had 7 court appearances before the charges were finally dropped.
Oh, yeah. a little ridiculous. They, you know, how you're entitled to what they call due process and a speedy trial, but this, you know, lots of cases get drawn out for the better close, but you know, close to a year. You know, from, I mean, he got arrested in October, and it was August before his, of the following year before his charges were dropped.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, and just shows the ludicrousness of the legal system and speedy trial. Although I do believe that there were a couple of continuances filed by him and the prosecutor. You know, so there were continuances for, you know, so circumstances that could not be avoided.
Right.
But still, you know, 7 court appearances before finally having the charges dropped. They couldn't have dropped the charges after the first or the second.
No, and the thing is...
Or the 6th court appearance?
No, they didn't want to. It costs you more money. You, as the person who gets arrested and has to show up to court, costs you money because if you're working... You have to take time off of work to show up. So that's 7 days that you miss at work. And not all employers are nice and pay you or allow you to take your vacation days for things like this. So if you are lucky enough to have a job that gets vacation days.
And Nick is calling in right now. So
fantastic.
Let's go ahead. And Nick, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Welcome
can
to
you
the show, me? Nicholas.
Yes, we can. Welcome to Voluntary Values. You are live on the air on LRN.FM and also here in Keene on Liberty 94.3.
Outstanding.
So, Nick, tell us about your...
How's it going today?
Good. Tell us about your charges and your court appearances.
What did you say? I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit.
Tell us about your charges. Supposed crime were you charged with, if you don't mind sharing that information? And then just tell us about the 7 different court appearances that finally led to the charges being dropped.
Well, it all started back in October. I was running late for work, and I couldn't find my house keys, so I decided to leave my front door unlocked. While I was at work, the latch on the door was a little broken, and apparently the wind was strong enough to blow it open. So my downstairs neighbor, who claims she watches a lot of CSI, called the police.
Totally ridiculous.
Maybe I was dead or had been robbed.
Okay, so there's the first problem. Your neighbor watches CSI. Problem number two, neighbor calls the cops.
Problem number one.
Okay, problem number two, neighbor calls the cops. Okay, and what happened from there?
The police entered my home without a warrant and without invitation to enter the premises. They searched through my bedroom drawers looking to see if perhaps I had had a cash box that had money taken out of it, so they claimed.
Right.
And they found my stash of marijuana and paraphernalia. And
okay, so
with possession.
It was an illegal, unconstitutional search.
Right.
Yes.
I counted at least 5, if not 6 problems that were caused by people other than yourself inviting these armed men with shiny badges into your house before anything ever happened as far as them charging you with a supposed crime. So they found some herbal substance that some group of guys said that you're not supposed to have, and you were charged with possession?
Yes.
Was that just regular possession or possession with intent to distribute?
No, the amount that they found was less than enough to fill a pipe with, so it was just possession.
Hold on, less than enough to fill a pipe with...
Yes, they charged me with 0.1 grams.
I have never actually possessed any illegal substance. But if I had supposedly not even enough to fill a pipe, I would not even say that I had any on me.
I hear that completely.
But that is neither here nor there. So you get charged.
Well, he didn't really have any choice because he wasn't present at the time.
Right.
But I'm just saying, going like, in.
If I, the the Ron White story about where he got charged with 7/8 of a gram.
Oh, geez.
And he said, when I have 7/8 of a gram of marijuana, I consider myself to be out of marijuana. So if I had a 1/10 of a gram, I would consider myself to be out.
And that's 0.6 of a gram more than I had.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. So you get charged with this minute amount that was probably residue inside of a baggie. And then you wound up having 7 court appearances. How exactly did that happen that you had 7 court appearances?
Well, for the first two, it was clear that the state, quote unquote, did not have their arguments presented properly. They didn't file the necessary brief to pursue a case against me. They were late in discharging my discovery to my lawyer, so he was not adequately prepared. So that required another postponement. For the next 3 or 4 cases, hearings that we had, during which time I was moving back and forth between New Hampshire and New Jersey, because I had to appear in court in New Jersey so many times, the prosecutor was unable to have the cops present that had arrested me, which was necessary to complete the case. So each time, you know, it was somebody failed to appear or somebody didn't file a brief they were supposed to file. But, you know, if I were to not go to court, for example, like the officers did not do 5 times before the 6th hearing, when they finally showed up, I would have a warrant out for my arrest. But
okay,
when the police do it, it's okay.
So I was incorrect. You never actually filed. For some reason, I was thinking that you had actually filed a continuance once.
Once I did, yes. For my 6th or 7th hearing, I skipped out to go to Porkfest, actually, because I figured that after 6 or 7 hearings, the state had had enough of my time and money, and that in the future they would probably have more, and I just wanted to have a week for myself. And also, I didn't have transportation back from New Hampshire, so.
Right. Okay. So it actually was extended much longer than it should have been, and only one of those times was it ever actually your fault that it got extended.
Yes, only once, and there was no warrant issued for my arrest because the judge was aware of how many hearings we had already had.
Okay, so they basically said no harm, no foul on you missing a court appearance, but yet your supposed possession of a minor amount of a plant that if you so happen to set on fire has some side effects that make people happy.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to remind you that if I'm such a criminal, why is it that I was allowed to walk free until 2 weeks ago I would have been convicted?
All right, now you're just trying to use logic. And as we know, with the men that wear ties and their buddies that wear the badges, logic is one of those things that you dare not speak. You know,
right.
How dare you use logic? You know, I was talking to Emberly about reading the local court log and noticing that the people that actually have victims pay fees or fines that are much less than those that have, you know, these crimes
actual
without victims. That violates the laws of logic. Nick, can you hang with us and continue this discussion?
I sure can.
All right. We will be back with Nick talking about his dealings with the court here on Voluntary Value. This is Voluntary Values on LRN.FM. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Emberly.
And joining us via telephone all the way from New Jersey is Nick Schenken. Nick, thank you for holding over. And you were telling us the reason that you had 7 different court appearances before charges were finally dropped. tell us about the final court appearance that you had, and you know what exactly happened before or during that court appearance when they actually dropped the charges.
Okay, well, I have to backtrack a little bit to the hearing that we had before that.
Okay.
Because that was the first time that we actually had the chance to really have my case be heard rather than just postponed again for another month. So the prosecutor was there. Officer Valentin was there, the officer who had arrested me. I'd like to note that the entire time he was arresting me and trying to ruin my life, he kept telling me that drugs were going to ruin my life.
Mm.
Irony!
He right. had to have a script provided to him by the prosecutor so that he knew how to answer all the questions correctly that day. And the whole thing was just really embarrassing on behalf of the quote-unquote state, the prosecutor, who was a different prosecutor than the one at my last hearing. This guy's name's Nick Costa. He privately threatened my lawyer and said that he wasn't going to forget this because of the fact that I didn't take a plea deal and I pled not guilty. And anyway, so the judge seemed really torn because my lawyer had provided so much case law saying that what the cops had done was illegitimate in the eyes of the law. So he decided to call a month-long recess or whatever to think about it. So he looked over all the case law, and we had the final hearing. It was Tuesday of last week, or the week, not the Tuesday that just passed, but the Tuesday before then.
Okay, and, so mid-August.
Yes. So the main point of argument on behalf of the prosecutor was this Community Care Provisions Act.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, it extends the police's power to, in the name of, you know, community caretaking, maybe enter homes or vehicles if there seems to be some sort of threat. It's basically more of a leeway for the police to do what they want.
So but, it's basically,
you know, supposedly for a good reason.
It's basically open license for any man with the badge to walk anywhere he wants to,
yep.
So long as he can find something.
Right.
Oh, I saw yeah. this door open, but I'm exactly. not going to tell you that it was only open because I turned the knob and pushed it. But this door was open, and I walked in, and there were, you know, bad things happening.
You see it all the time on cop television shows where they, you know, if the door is slightly ajar, they just push it open and walk right in, or they always check the door handle to see whether it's, you know, open or not, and then they walk right in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they use this BS
community caretaking
law.
It's just a provision that they have in New Jersey.
A BS provision that basically gives them open warrant to go anywhere they want to look for bad things.
Basically, yes.
Okay.
But. Anyway, so that was the argument that the prosecutor used. So the judge, and I couldn't believe how reasonable he was, because I will say of the seven times that I had to sit through these proceedings, I never saw a single person that got away with a not guilty. Well, I didn't see anybody plead not guilty, but I also didn't see anybody get away without being sentenced and fined. But he was very reasonable, and he made a point that was of particular significance to the prosecutor, you know, asking, well, if, you know, say, for example, the door is merely unlocked but not open, does that, under the Community Care Provisions Act, does that give police the right to just enter a home because it's left unlocked? And she said, no, it doesn't. But, you know, he argued that that was a really gray area. It was really vague. And my lawyer had cited this provision. It's called the three-tier, I forget exactly what it's called, but it's basically the three conditions that allow for a search without permission or a warrant. And the judge even said that an open door did not meet any one of those three
right.
conditions.
Okay, so your case was thrown out on technicality?
Well, it was thrown out based on the fact that, I guess it was a series of technicalities, as is any bureaucratic system. But basically, there was no grounds for the search whatsoever. And the writing was on the wall for that. The judge took a look at it, cited specific instances of case law to back it up, and the prosecutor and the arresting officer were unable to defend themselves.
Well, I guess that's one win out of just a rough estimate of how many people during your seven different court appearances, how many people do you think the judge saw in those seven appearances?
At least 700 or 800.
Okay, least. So one win at out least. Of 800. That's...
Yeah, not good odds.
That is not good odds. That's horrific.
Well, but and the point that I would like to make, though, is that I did not witness anybody else plead not guilty.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's ever. The point that I was about to make. Is I've seen
the
statistics.
The only difference is that I pled not guilty.
I've seen statistics that only 6% of people ever actually go to court.
Right.
They plea out before it ever
plead
goes to
court. Plead out long before.
They either pay the fine or they take a plea deal of some sort before ever going into the courthouse.
Yeah. And then, I figured there was a good chance that I might lose, but, you know, I could appeal it, and, you know, that would be a decision that I might have to make, but luckily I didn't have to.
So just a rough estimate on the statistics that you gave, that's less than, like, a tenth of a percent that went
Very
to
sad.
Court and were then found not guilty.
Very, very sad.
And one reason behind that is that the man in the robe with the gavel is paid by the man that's trying to prosecute you.
Right.
They're paid Absolutely. By the same people. So, of course, they're going to protect themselves.
What's even scarier about where I live, at least, in Mount Laurel in New Jersey, or at least where I was, you know, having court proceedings, I totally forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, they line people up and they try them five at a time, like, for, like, the same offenses. Say it's, yeah. you know, a speeding offense or whatever. They'll just call five names and line them up and sentence them all together.
That is ridiculous.
So they don't even get a yeah. chance to mount a defense.
Nope.
They're just herded like cattle up in front of this judge. That's insane.
Most people waive their right to a lawyer anyway.
Anything else you would like to add, Nick? We've got 30 seconds left in this segment. Anything else you'd like to add?
Never take a plea deal. Always fight for your innocence, and you might have a shot at winning.
And any chance that you'll be heading back up to the Shire anytime soon?
I should be up there in mid-September.
Yay!
All right. I look forward to seeing you, and thank you very much for being on
Thanks,
Voluntary
Nick.
Values.
Thanks Love you.
Have a great day, guys. Love you, too.
This is Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And we've been talking this hour about victim crimes and victimless crimes, and more specifically about the trials and tribulations of a friend of ours by the name of Nick Shankin, who had seven court appearances down in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, before finally having the charges dropped due to a series of technicalities.
Right.
In which the people,
oh, violations.
The people calling themselves the state violated not only Nick's rights, but also the provisions that granted them the supposed authority to walk unwelcomed and unwarranted into his house and find a minute amount of an herbal substance
that right.
they do not want you to have. But Emberly, you were actually at the trial.
I was, and it was unlike any trial I've actually ever been to. So we get to the courthouse at 11 o'clock on Tuesday, August 14th, and we're only there for an hour, which is probably the quickest time I've ever spent in a court.
I've never had a court appearance that
Me either,
short.
That quick of a time. But while I was there, I decided, you know, after the first like two or three cases, that I was going to start taking a tally of how many of the crimes that came up were actually involved a victim and those that did not. So in about this all took place in maybe about 30, 35 minutes. So I counted that two victim crimes, which some people disagree with me that animal cruelty is an actual victim crime, but an animal lives, breathes, eats, has feelings. So I consider them to be victims when they are hurt.
Okay. And for anyone that is not familiar with the operation of the Mount Laurel, New Jersey court system, Nick and you both said that they pulled people up generally five at a time.
Now, this I did not see on this particular. We were only there for an hour, so I don't know what happened in the preceding two. They had a 2-hour block before we got there of people that came up. I don't know. That was the first time they were called in, so they may have done that. I wasn't there to witness that.
Okay, yeah, he was saying, like, you know, everybody that's there for a speeding ticket would generally get called up in a block.
I think what happened at the 11 o'clock hour when we actually got there was that these were people who had shown up previously.
Okay, and had were coming for their second to some right. kind of plea bargain.
And I will say that the state made well over $3,000 in less than 45 minutes while I was there.
$3,000 in less than 45 minutes, and only two of these defendants actually committed a crime with a victim.
That's
and
right.
One of those, depending on where one falls on the animal rights issue, one of those may have not had a victim. There was no human victim.
There were no there was a human victim in the check fraud case.
Right. That's
so
what I said.
There was an actual victim in that case.
The animal cruelty case had no human victim.
Right. The animal cruelty case did not involve a human.
It was this person abusing their own dog.
But some of the other things that I saw, not only were speeding or possession of marijuana, but littering. And here's a great one, soliciting without a license and soliciting without a permit.
What were they soliciting?
They had little like agorist businesses on the side that they were selling things.
Okay, so legal things to sell.
Right. Legal, okay, so they were, like, I think one guy was like selling something that he made at home, just on the street, like a street vendor. Which you see in all kinds of towns, like the hot dog vendors are out, stuff like that. I don't know what the specific of the other gentleman was, but then there was another one, storing construction material in an unauthorized zone. So this guy had some stuff from work, some construction material from work that he stored at his house. And
so he parked a bulldozer in his driveway, possibly.
Right. And he got ticketed and fined. I believe it was about $400 for this. Almost all of them were at least $300 a ticket.
Okay, and I'm looking at the list that you posted on freekeen.com where you wrote an article titled Victim Crimes versus Victimless Crimes in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. That way, if any listeners wants to go find this article.
Yeah, definitely find the article and read it.
So on freekeen.com, victim crimes versus victimless crimes in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. So I'm looking at the rest of this list, and some of these, while they have no actual victim, they do have the possibility for a victim.
Right.
And
there could be a victim, potentially.
I would love to go down this road that is often only brought upon us by statists who object to the ideology of peaceful interaction. Who would build the road? And you couldn't do that on a private road. Well, yeah, I'm guessing most likely if there are private roads and you are using said private roads, you are agreeing to abide by certain behavior.
Exactly.
So drunk driving, while I certainly do not condone the activity.
Nor do I.
There is no victim. And if there is a victim, then the person should be charged with, you know, victimizing someone.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I put DUI on this list specifically, because in this specific case, there was no victim. The man had just gotten in his car and was driving out of the driveway into the road, and he got busted within 2 minutes.
You know, without bringing up.
But the funniest part about that whole situation was that when the judge read off the gentleman who was Russian, his blood alcohol content, he says the prosecutor said it's 0.14. And he goes, oh, well, that's not too much. The judge said, oh, well, that's not too much. That's well over the legal limit, but yet that's not too much according to the judge.
Well, and here's something else that is interesting about that 0.14. It was not that long ago that the legal limit for blood alcohol content was 0.1.
Exactly.
And then it was lowered to 0.08.
Which means that if I have a beer and get in my car and drive, technically I'm drunk driving.
And based on
who's even smaller than me.
Based on the 0.08 level, 0.14 is almost double the limit.
Exactly.
It's almost double. But based on the old 0.1, which was the standard.
So maybe that's what he was thinking of.
Years ago. That's not even 1.5 times as much. So, you know, there's a great. And what? Why was the change from 0.1 to 0.08?
So they could make more money. Isn't it all revenue driven? I mean, don't you see a pattern with these two crimes involving a victim, whether or not they're human or not? And all of these, there's at least 10 on this list that I saw in an hour of revenue driven crimes.
Right. And littering.
Littering. I got charged with littering once.
I certainly do not condone littering, but it is my opinion that littering is only, it's a product of the tragedy of the commons.
Well, let me also explain to you that when I got ticketed for littering, I wasn't the one who did the littering. I was the one driving the car.
But, so you were not the person that threw trash.
Clearly,
into
I was not the person.
Common area.
The police officer said to me, "You are the one that's responsible because you are operating the car. The operator of the car gets the ticket."
Okay, that is more than my brain can handle at this time, and I'm very glad I hear the music. We will continue talking about victim crimes and victimless crimes, and probably go down the road talking about the tragedy of the commons and the government claiming to be the victim.
Yeah.
In all of these instances, we'll be back on Voluntary Values. This is Voluntary Values on LRN FM and Liberty 94.3 here in Keene, New Hampshire. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And we've been talking about victim crimes versus victimless crimes. And we were heading down the road of the tragedy of the commons. Specifically talking about littering, which, you know, realistically is a victimless crime.
Yeah. Unless you're throwing something at a person and you hit them in the head or any other body part.
Right. Well, no, but when I say
that would be assault, though, I believe.
Right. That would be assault with deadly garbage. But no, littering, it really, you don't see a littering problem inside businesses.
No.
Yeah, it just, you know, think the last time you went into a grocery store and saw trash laying on the floor. It doesn't really happen.
Well, I was really surprised when I was in Philadelphia last week. You know, many major cities that I've been in, that I've walked around in, there are plenty of garbage cans all over the streets. But I was hard pressed to find a garbage can in Philadelphia.
Yeah, generally there's
Every 5 feet or so.
Block or two at the minimum.
Right. In Philadelphia, it's not like that.
I'm just trying to think about downtown Keene. Yeah, I think it's generally pretty much every block.
Yeah. Every block or two, there's a garbage can. So if you want to prevent the tragedy of the commons, then have garbage cans available. I would gladly put one right outside my house to prevent littering.
I've seen places where there are garbage cans and still trash laying everywhere.
Well, some people are just lazy.
Yeah, because, I tossed my thing in the general direction of the garbage can and I missed. I'm not going to pick it up. They pay some guy to do that.
So if somebody is lazy and they don't want to take their garbage over 2 feet to a garbage can and put it in the actual garbage, and somebody throws something out of a window, should they be fined for that?
I do not believe that they should be fined by a government agency. However, I do believe that, if all property were actually owned by individuals.
Yes, in a voluntary society, would be.
In a voluntary society, there would be no commonly held property.
Right.
Or at least in my version of a voluntary society. And, I can't dictate what anybody else's voluntary society looks like. Otherwise, it's not a voluntary society.
True.
But the way I envision a voluntary society, there is no commonly held property.
No.
So, if someone drops trash on my property and I see them doing so, I should be able to charge them a fee for the amount of labor that I exerted to pick up after them. Oh, hey, you left trash everywhere. It took me 10 minutes to clean up your mess. My rate is generally $10 an hour, so I'm going to charge you $2. That's how I envision a voluntary
society
working.
But not $300 and 40 hours of community service.
You threw a Coke cup outside of your window while you were driving. Oh, wait, it wasn't actually you, but it was somebody in your car, and you're driving, so therefore you're responsible for the actions of every other individual within a 7-foot radius of your person.
This wasn't a child who threw out garbage. This was an adult.
So therefore,
riding
we will
in a
charge
car.
You $375 or whatever the ticket was.
When I went to court for the littering charge, it was a $1,000 fine or 40 hours of community service. So for us cash-strapped single parents, I had to opt for the 40 hours of community service. So when I get down to do my 40 hours of community service, I have to go to this orientation deal, and I'm at a table, this big round table with all these people around it, and everyone is talking about why they were having to do community service. And when it got to me, the whole room busted out laughing.
Okay.
Because they thought it was the most ridiculous thing they'd ever heard.
And it is very ridiculous. And in this circumstance, and in many other circumstances in which there is no identifiable victim, the government plays the role of the victim.
Right.
Although the government is actually the aggressor in everything.
Yes.
And you have an article
about
the government using the age-old bully trick, where they pretend to be the victim,
they pretend the victim is the attacker,
yes,
and the bully is merely defending himself.
Yes.
So this is on Washington's blog, and I guess the person here is Washington. He says, the bully will keep on getting away with harassing others until people stop falling for his victim act. Police have recently stated on the record that resisting police desires may be labeled violence, even if the police desires are unlawful. Curling up in a ball to avoid police violence may be considered active resistance, justifying the use of more force, including baton strikes. Indeed, in modern America, even being worried that the government is acting in a bullying manner can literally get one arrested, committed to a psychiatric ward, or labeled as a terrorist. Of course, if you speak out too much against the government, even worse things could happen to you.
Okay, so let me stop you for just a second. Curling up in a ball to prevent from being hit with batons is active resistance.
And apparently it justifies the use of more violence upon that person.
Okay. A couple of years ago, my publishing company published a book called The Doublespeak Dictionary. And I worked with the author to write the definition of resisting arrest. And the Doublespeak Dictionary is written as a satirical book. However, the satirical definition of resisting arrest is now the actual definition of resisting arrest.
That's because we live in a doublespeak world.
To fail to assist in one's own capture.
Right.
Is the satirical definition, which is now actually the legal definition. Our friend Ademo served some time in jail in Manchester for supposedly resisting arrest because he went limp and laid on the ground.
Right. That now they can use more violence because you are not complying and with their wishes.
The sole reason that he was being arrested was writing with chalk.
Well, we profiled a story about children's chalk on Shire TV a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, the girl down in Richmond.
Right. She was in Virginia, and the woman got 50 hours of community service in lieu of a fine.
And banned for life from all state parks.
City parks, I believe it was. For her daughter chalking on the sidewalk at a local park.
Actually, the daughter chalked on a rock.
On a rock. At
the park.
That's right. A rock at the park. So she defaced natural.
When I read this article, I literally busted out laughing and could not continue recording the podcast that I was recording at the time.
The saddest.
Because she drew a door to a magic land.
Right. But the saddest part of this whole story, outside of the poor 4-year-old being terrorized by the police, is the fact that the mother agreed with the state on how they treated her and her daughter. She agreed to it. She said, yes, I think that this is the right thing to do. And that is what astounded me the most about the whole story, is that she thought it was okay to be arrested for her daughter chalking on a rock at a park.
Can you say Stockholm syndrome?
I mean, how...
Where you begin to love your captors.
It's just... It's insanity. It's insanity.
Here in Keene, this past Friday night, some friends went out doing cop blocking.
Nice.
And I was the dispatch person, listening to the police scanner and then radioing that... where police activity was going on. And they spotted a girl being given a DUI roadside Olympic test.
Oh, boy.
And I watched this video, and oddly enough, the roadside Olympic test that they give you for a DUI is the same as the test they give you for a concussion.
Oh.
So the girl, while she did okay, she actually, she failed the test because she didn't comply explicitly how they told her to do things. So when I watched it, I was like, yeah, she failed. But they were telling me, over the radio, that she began to, apologize for driving after having a beer or two.
Wow.
And she was actually thanking the cop.
Oh, my
gosh.
As
he was placing her in handcuffs. This is Voluntary Values. Join us every Sunday from 3 to 5 on LRN.FM. Until next week, be peaceful.